The COVID death toll is staggering.
Today, we mark a tragic milestone here in the United States. 1 million COVID deaths.
When the pandemic started, that number seemed unimaginable. But here we are, almost 2.5 years later.
It's such a grave milestone. It's 1 million people with 1 million unique stories.
The grief and pain cannot be measured.
I never really thought of, like, those people who are, like, losing their loved ones and, like, never really thought of those numbers as anything else than numbers. And now it's like those are people.
By one estimate, 215,000 children have lost a parent.
And my first thought was, like, what do I do now? Like, how do I move on from this? How do I do life without this?
This week on 880 In Depth, the human toll of the coronavirus.
It's incredibly sad.
Welcome to 880 In Depth. I'm Michael Wallace. It's hard to comprehend the feeling of loss across the country. In cities and suburbs and rural areas, there's been heartbreak and death. It doesn't matter where you live, how much money you make, or your political affiliation. COVID doesn't care. For each death, there are concentric circles of grief and a multiplying factor.
A family of 20, another 20 friends, and he had his own friends, and he had his coworkers, and I don't know, 60, 70, 100.
A little later, we'll hear about a nonprofit created to help children after 9/11 that's been stepping up to help the kids of COVID victims.
We have a project called the COVID Response Project, where we're working to build the capacity of service providers to really be that nurturing community and make sure that there's a framework of support for children who have been bereaved by COVID.
But let's start with Janice Coney. Last March, the Bergen County woman and her husband Eric, along with one of their two kids, were diagnosed with COVID. In April of 2021, Eric died. He was 51. Janice tells WCBS reporter Peter Haskell she's been trying to make it from one day to the next.
Since Eric died, it's definitely been a challenge, you know, dealing with our grief, dealing with raising children, raising teenagers by myself, has been incredibly challenging. You know, for the most part, I think that we're all doing pretty well, and I'm so grateful that I have my children, and we really, the three of us really connect and support each other. But it's difficult, you know, definitely difficult moments that we go through every day.
How have they been doing?
Overall, they've been doing really well. They've each responded differently. My son Colton, he's 13. He was 12 when Eric passed. And he was really upset for the first 2 weeks. And then he sort of, I think he feels this obligation that now he's the man of the house, even though he's the youngest of the three of us, feels this obligation to sort of take care of us and support us emotionally. So he's incredibly empathetic and, you know, really has always been there for us. But I worry about him a little bit because he doesn't really display his own grief. And then my daughter, Kylie, she's 15. She definitely shows her emotions more, and she's maybe able to express her emotions more. She has days where she does great, and she's retold her story and shared her story, you know, several times, and that really has helped her a lot. And then there are days where she's just very quiet, upset, depressed. Her anxiety at times has been through the roof, especially when it comes to me. It's difficult sometimes for me to leave the house, even to just go grocery shopping. She gets nervous, and I'll have to either take her with me or she'll stay on the phone with me until I can arrive at the grocery store safely and she knows I'm there okay. You know, she's scared of losing me, and, you know, sometimes her anxiety then gives me anxiety.
I'm curious, when Eric died, what did you hear from other people, and where have you gotten your support?
So when Eric passed away, we were overwhelmed with the amount of support that we got, and we were so, so grateful for it. Of course, we have our family, you know, his siblings, my siblings, both of our sets of parents. They've been incredible. But then we've had this incredible group of friends that we've met over the years here in Lyndhurst that really were there for us. I mean, they were at our house bringing food and just being there for us. Like, I just remember the first 2 weeks, there was always someone with us. It was incredible. And to this day, you know, they still check up on us, and, you know, it's been wonderful, the support that we've received from of course our family, which was expected, but these friends that we've made, it's been incredible. We're so grateful for them.
How important was that for you?
So important to, you know, one of the scariest things, of course, losing a spouse is I'm all alone, and I'm doing this by myself. And, you know, there are moments where I do have to deal with things myself and make my own decisions, but to know that I have a network of friends that I can, you know, bounce ideas off of or ask them, you know, what I should do, when they're able to help, or they're able to take my kids and do things with my kids that I wouldn't be able to do by myself. It's been so, so important, really. I'm so, so grateful.
COVID had been waxing and waning for a year when they were diagnosed, and it didn't seem as scary as it once did.
When we first got sick, our symptoms were pretty minor for the first few days. So we really weren't all that concerned. And then over the course of 1 or 2 days, you know, especially with Eric and myself, our symptoms just escalated. Eric and I both ended up in the hospital within a week of testing positive. And that was really scary because, you know, you heard so many stories of people going into the hospital and not coming out of the hospital. Eric went in a day before I did, and I remember the next day when I finally had to go in, I was just so worried for my children, so worried that would be the last time that they saw us. It was emotionally very, very difficult to deal with, and for the children as well. You know, they had to, you know, within 24 hours, had to pick up and leave the house and grab all their schoolwork and go stay with my brother while we were in the hospital, who lives an hour away, leave their friends. It was a really, really difficult time and very, very scary.
Were any of you vaccinated?
Well, unfortunately, at the time when we got sick, the vaccinations, we really weren't eligible for them yet. So we were not vaccinated at the time that we got sick. And ironically, I actually received the phone call that we could, for us to get vaccinated on the day that Eric passed. So since then, I did get vaccinated in April of 2021 after he passed, as well as my children.
The political controversy surrounding the virus compounded their misery. Her son Colton is 13 and her daughter Kylie is 15.
I think a lot of people are kind of like, yeah, like, it's time to move on now. And it's like, you really don't move on from this type of thing. Like, it sticks with you forever.
We'll hear more from Kylie in a few minutes. Janice says the attention on the virus has been impossible to ignore. There have been battles about masking and vaccine mandates and just about any other restriction.
You know, my children are old enough to understand it and, you know, hear it themselves. I mean, losing someone to COVID is so hard because a day doesn't go by that we don't hear about COVID. We hear the numbers increasing. We hear the controversy over people complaining about masks and vaccines and social distancing and, you know, people that call the pandemic the scamdemic, you know, it's so upsetting to us. And it's upsetting. I can't protect my children from that. They hear it on social media. They hear it in school even, you know. And that's really been difficult. You know, we also are, you know, are tired of the masks and the vaccines and all of that. But, you know, to us, those are inconveniences for us as well, but they're minor inconveniences compared to what we're dealing with. We lost a life to this. And if it means wearing masks for a little bit longer, then we'll wear a mask for a little bit longer. You know, that's really been hard, you know, and knowing that I can't protect my children from hearing all the negativity and all the controversy surrounding the pandemic. That's been really difficult.
Over the period of time, at what point did things start to feel better, if they have started to feel better, and how have things changed over the past 13 months?
So, I don't know if things feel better necessarily. They just feel different. I think the first year getting through all those first milestones was rough. And oftentimes it's not even getting through the actual milestone of, you know, the first birthdays and the anniversaries and the holidays. Oftentimes it was the anticipation of having to deal with those days without Eric that were very upsetting. But then oftentimes I think because we anticipated them and talked about them and made sure we had a support system around us when we had, but when those days did actually happen, we usually got through them okay. So now putting like all those first anniversaries behind us, since we just passed, you know, last month was the first anniversary of his passing. I think things are, I hate to say better, but they're different. I think we're just dealing with it better and accepting that this is our new reality.
Tell us about Erica.
Oh, Eric, where do I begin? He was a former Marine. He loved this country. He was so proud of serving in the Marines. He was a friendly, outgoing guy, full of life. He was the life of the party. He loved his family, loved his friends. He made friends easily. And he was all about having fun. He truly lived life to the fullest. Looking back, I don't think that there's anything that he would regret not doing. If he wanted something or wanted to do something, he would find a way to do it and did it. You know, he truly enjoyed life.
He was definitely a live life to the fullest type of guy. Like, always did fun before he had to do, like, his other responsibilities in a way. You know, always put his fun first, and just such like a energetic, very friendly guy. I remember this one time we were at the mall and he was a Marine and the guy in front of him was a Marine, and they started talking and we ended up like having dinner with them. Like, just such like a outgoing guy, could get along with anyone, and really, really, really cared about his kids. Always put us first, no matter what. You know, we could be in the wrong and he would still put us first. And just such like a energetic, fun, loving guy.
He sounds really amazing. I am curious though, when do you miss him most?
I would say in a lot of different scenarios, like, you know, seeing maybe little girls with their dads is hard, because it reminds me, when I was a little girl, I was really close with him. Like, I still was up until he passed, but when I was a little girl, like, I was super, super close with him, always, like, a daddy's girl, like, type thing. So it's sometimes really hard to, you know, see other little girls with their dads, and just anything where, like, I guess kind of just seeing other children with their dads, or, you know, if it's somewhere he used to take me, like, he always took me to that new American Dream Mall. So sometimes going there brings back a lot of memories, just like the places we used to go together.
Kylie is now a high school sophomore. She too had COVID and is still struggling with long haul symptoms more than a year later. But the ache of her loss can't be ignored.
I'm doing okay, I guess. The 1 year of my dad's passing recently came up, so I feel like that's definitely threw me off a little. But overall, good. Summer's coming up, a lot to look forward to. So overall, pretty good.
That first anniversary, what was that like for you?
Honestly, I didn't really know what to expect because I haven't really experienced a death of a loved one before. So I think the anticipation was worse than the actual day. I was just anticipating to be really emotional and just really sad, and like, I really did not know how I was going to get through the day. But it was really nice. I spent time with my family and overall just had a really nice day.
Tell us about just coping over the past year. What has that been like, and what have you learned about it?
Like I said, I've never really had to cope with anything like this before. So to lose something as significant as a parent, especially being super close to my dad, was really, really difficult. Honestly, I'm doing a lot better than I thought I would. I remember first hearing the news, and my first thought was like, what do I do now? Like, how do I move on from this? How do I do life without this? And, you know, you just got to take it day by day, really just kind of push through it. And, you know, I feel like he would want me to be happy, so I tried not to let it consume me. Of course, I was so sad at times, and it really, really does just come in waves. Some days I look at pictures, I think of memories, and it makes me really happy. And others, it just makes me really sad. And just also having a really good support system and being around a lot of friends and family has really helped a lot.
The nonprofit Tuesday's Children understands what that's all about. The group was created in the wake of 9/11 to provide support for children who had lost parents. Now it's stepping forward to help COVID kids. Again, there are more than 200,000 kids who have lost a parent. Sally Lynch is a senior program and development consultant. She spoke to our Peter Haskell.
At Tuesday's Children, we've been doing this work for over 2 decades, and we know that when a child loses a parent, it can have a long-term impact. As children go through different developmental stages, they re-grieve and they experience their grief differently. So we know that these children who've lost a parent or caregiver to COVID are going to need long-term support. They're going to need peer support, a caring community. And so I think it's up to all of us as a country to look after them.
What exactly does that mean, look after them?
Sure. So at Tuesday's Children, you know, when we were founded, we took an approach that was maybe non-traditional, non-clinical. We started with programs that really brought families together with other families who understood so that they could, you know, experience some of the things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to experience, having lost that parent in their life. You know, we see the parent really as a guiding light in the life of a child. And if their grief is left unaddressed, you know, and particularly when they lose a parent in sudden circumstances, and I know there's debate about whether the deaths due to COVID are considered traumatic loss, but I think for a child to lose a parent in the context of a global pandemic when everybody has spiking anxiety, it's certainly a traumatic experience, and any death of a parent is considered a trauma in the life of a child. So to take care of them, you know, we as an organization at Tuesday's Children, founded after 9/11, set out to kind of be there as a community support for the 3,051 children who lost a parent on September 11th. We wanted to make sure that they had mentors in their lives, adult role models. Youth mentoring is one of our primary programs. We also wanted to make sure that they were connected to a community that supported them, that as they reached the age where they started to look to establish careers, that they had opportunities to go to Take Our Children to Work Day. Even if they didn't have a parent who could take them to work with them, we created that opportunity. We bring kids to Congress and let them meet with Congress members. We work with 140 corporate partners to give kids who've lost a parent the experience of, you know, visiting the American Ballet Theater or, you know, Morgan Stanley or other financial companies or, you know, companies in the culinary industry, whatever kids are interested in. So we know that that support there is needed. We also know that, you know, the surviving parent, if there is one, or whoever the caregiver is, the guardian, the legal guardian for the parent, needs guidance and support around what to expect and how to process the different reactions that kids may have at different ages and stages.
You talk about some of the kind of long-term consequences. What are the short-term needs? A parent dies, as you say, it's so traumatic for a child. How does a kid get through that fog of grief?
So, you know, it really depends on, it's a very individualized process, obviously, per family, per individual, per person, per child, but it also depends on the age of the child. So, you know, when we first started out with our organization, the average age of the kids who lost a parent on 9/11 was 8. But we had kids who were very, very young. We had kids who were teenagers at the time. And they had very different reactions. You know, kids who are in early childhood may not even fully conceptualize the concept, you know, may not fully understand the concept of death, the finality of it. And so, you know, understanding what developmental stage they're at is very important in helping them. You know, some of our surviving parents after 9/11 who had very young children were surprised that their child would kind of repeat the news continually. My daddy died in the World Trade Center, or, you know, certain things like that. And they would see that as a, you know, they would wonder, is there something wrong that my child keeps repeating this? But it was actually a natural way that the child was processing that information. And likewise, for teenagers going through particular milestones, even if they lost a child at the age of 5, you know, when they transition from elementary school to middle school or to high school, or go through a significant birthday, you know, a 16th birthday when they would expect that their parent would be there, they may re-grieve and kind of experience that loss anew because they grieved the loss of the parent, the person that they would look forward to, you know, playing with when they came home from work, in a different way than they would, you know, maybe look forward to celebrating that birthday with the parent, or even as they get older, you know, telling them about their first job or getting accepted into college or getting married, things like that.
Kids of all stripes have been suffering through COVID. Even those who haven't lost loved ones are dealing with stress and anxiety. We've been hearing a lot about resilience.
You know, resilience certainly is a buzzword that I think has been used in our organization, of course, throughout the past two decades, but I think it's increasingly being used in vernacular anyway. There are two types of resilience, really. There's the kind of resilience that a person is born with, that is just kind of a person's natural ability to overcome adversity. And then there is resilience that is taught. And, you know, that usually depends on a person's history and, you know, maybe previous traumas they've been through and how they've weathered other difficulties in their lives. But all of that really does play, those two types of resilience really do play into an individual's personal resilience. But when it comes to kids, it has been shown that kids are more resilient when they have a positive role model, at least one positive role model who is consistently in their lives. And so I think that's where children who've lost a parent are at increased risk and need that community support more than ever, and need programs like youth mentoring that Tuesday's Children offers, and really need that framework from all the different sectors, as I mentioned. That's why I say we kind of have a moral obligation as a society to be there for those kids who are COVID bereaved. Our organization, Tuesday's Children, is called Tuesday's Children because September 11th happened on a Tuesday, and we emphasize our responsibility as a society that those Tuesday's Children belong to all of us. And I think the same is true about the hundreds of thousands of children that have so far lost a parent to and primary caregiver to COVID in the U.S. They do belong to all of us as well.
Let's go back to Janice Coney and her take on 1 million COVID deaths.
It's incredibly sad. 1 million lives, 1 million Americans that have been lost. It's such a grave milestone. It's 1 million people with 1 million unique stories. And then, you know, I think of all the people surrounding those lives that have been, whose lives have been impacted forever. You know, I mean, within our family, our extended family of parents and siblings and nieces and nephews, there's 20 people that were impacted by Eric's loss of life. And then we count all our friends and his coworkers, and it's just, the number is just, it's incredible. It's very sad. It's a very sad day, for sure.
You really put that into perspective, because 1 million deaths is not 1 million lives affected. I mean, it's multiplied over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
Do you have a sense, You said about 20 people with your extended family. When you think about his friends and his coworkers and the people who really feel his loss, do you have any idea what that number might be?
You know, it's funny. I try sometimes to come up with that number, just thinking of the lives that he's impacted. I don't know. You know, sometimes I think, okay, our family is 20, another 20 friends, and he had his own friends, and he had his coworkers, and I don't know, 60, 70, 100, you know, and then I'm always taken aback. You know, sometimes I run into people in town that I haven't seen in a while, and they approach me, and they talk to me about him, and it's like, wow, like, he's still thinking of Eric? Like, you know, I barely knew him. Like, they just know our story, and it's to me, that's incredible, and it's incredibly comforting to know that, you know, they're thinking of him too, and the amount of people that he impacted, it's just, it's amazing.
So you're right in the heart of that group of people that are most severely impacted. What should the rest of us know about the impact of COVID?
I just wish that the rest of the population would be a little bit more sympathetic to us. You know, again, I talked earlier about, you know, all this controversy surrounding COVID, and we get it. We get it too. You know, we're so tired of it also, but, you know, just be a little bit sympathetic when you, you know, complain about your inconveniences and thinking about our family, especially the children that have been impacted. You know, it's sad for my children to go to school and, you know, and I mean, now masks are no longer mandated, but, you know, there were teachers that were complaining about masks and complaining about COVID and you know, and my poor kids have dealt with the loss of their father because of it. And now they have to continue on with their school day after hearing, you know, this teacher complain about their minor inconveniences. So, you know, just, I don't know, maybe be a little bit more sympathetic and just think before you complain about these minor inconveniences.
Her 15-year-old daughter, Kylie, is proud of the way her family has come together.
I think we've all been super, super strong, especially my mom. She continuously is there for me and my brother every single day, always puts us first. My brother has been really strong, too. He, I feel like, definitely conceals up his emotions more, so he's really there for me and my mom when we need it. And we've all just kind of had to adjust, change all of our schedules around because of this, and it's obviously been super, super life-changing, but I think we've all just really had to adjust and all just stayed super strong and really been there for each other when we need it.
You've been so patient. I guess my last question for you, just generally, do you think people get what your family's going through?
Honestly, I think the other people who are going through the same thing do, and I think a lot of families sympathize with us, but really no one will, unless they've gone through it, will completely and fully understand, will completely and fully understand what we've gone through. And, you know, I think after, you know, it's been a year, like, not that people get tired of, like, hearing us, like, whatever, of hearing us talk about it, but just, like, I think a lot of people are kind of like, yeah, like, it's time to move on now, and it's like, you really don't move on from this type of thing. Like, it sticks with you forever, and especially, like, COVID, like, everyone wants it to be over. And at the end of the day, those people still have their loved ones. And my dad, I will never get back.
That'll do it for this week's 880 In-Depth podcast. The executive producers are Tim Scheld and Peter Haskell. Our thanks to Janice and Kylie Coney and Sally Lynch, too. 880 In-Depth gives us a chance to focus on an important issue in our community. You can find us at WCBS880.com, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your audio. And please subscribe. I'm Michael Wallace. Thanks for listening, and be kind.